Welcome back to another episode of The Money Seat, the show where I, the host, put myself in the hot seat by bringing on various guests to ask me five questions related to money, finance, the market, the economy, anything really related to something a certified financial planner like myself would be able to help with. And I'm very excited for today's guest, Will. And before we get into the questions, I'd love if you could introduce yourself a little bit to the audience, Will.
Yeah, for sure. So my name is Will Heller. I'm a senior at Santa Clara University studying finance and art history. So I'm 21 years old. I was actually born in Connecticut and then grew up and spent most of my life in Issaquah, Washington, which is right outside of Seattle. Now I'm back down in Santa Clara.
Nice. So how old are you again, Will?
21.
Okay. Thank you for giving us a little bit about yourself. And let's transition now. I know you have some questions prepared, so especially from someone just graduating, I'm curious to see what these are because you're in a little different life phase than some of the other guests. So I'm excited to see what you have.
Something that I've sort of heard about is that bringing emotions into finance, I guess this is primarily focused on investing, but just in general,
yeah,
the problem that it cloud your judgment on many things that are statistical decisions. Do you agree with that sentiment, or do you think, as you said, you need to sort of account for the reality of the psychological element that definitely informs these decisions?
Yes. So there's two parts of that. So I agree that people make bad decisions about their money when emotions are involved at the time. So people get emotional about their money. And this is why, and I've said this before in the podcast, the average rate of return on the S&P 500 is 8%. And the average rate of return of the average investor is between 2 and 3. It's because they get euphoric when the market goes up and they start putting money in when they see it on the news. And then when the market goes down and hits a bottom of the year or the month, they get really sad and they start selling. And that's exactly the opposite of what you want to do. People get very emotional about their money. So my job is to prevent you from making those in the moment emotional mistakes about your money, about buying and selling and keeping the money in, and just understanding that I'm handling that. I'm doing this for everyone. We're keeping that emotion out of it. But then the other part of it is, I wouldn't necessarily say the emotions, but your thoughts, your feelings, your comfortability with the market and taking risk should guide how you invest. There's your emotions should guide the bigger picture. And then you then should not let your emotions irrationally make you do things that don't align to your bigger picture. And if that sounds a little complicated, I can tell people that we all have a bigger plan. We all have a regular emotional state in life for everything. And then there's a time where we get upset, we get panicked, whatever it is with life, with relationships, with the gym, with whatever, with food, right? We do things that are counter to what our bigger picture emotions are based on how we get, you know, irrationally at the time. So that's hopefully helps you answer that question. It is very important and they're all tied together. And once again, it's very hard for people to do that on their own, to realize, okay, the market's down, this sucks, I've lost 50% of my portfolio because 2008 happened, but my money doesn't have to come out for a while. There's nothing fundamentally wrong with Apple or Amazon or Google or any of these companies. So does selling these make sense right now based on my bigger picture of financial goals and stuff? Almost no one does that, right? They're just like, oh God, I lost money. I can't lose anymore, right? Or, oh my God, the market's at a high. I missed out. I got to get in. And so those are usually what drives people, like I said, to the 2 or 3%. So my job is to say, well, what are your big picture emotions, right? And then work in the fact to make sure that you don't become your own worst enemy, because a lot of people do that. A lot of people got killed in 2008 because, once again, it's true. It's your... For a lot of people, whether it's $100,000 or $10 million, if that's your whole life's net worth, it's going to mean the same to you. It doesn't matter about the value. If you earn $50,000, you're going to react the same as someone who has $5 million. It's really the same. It doesn't matter about the dollar. So,
right,
man, it's really that. And if you're someone like that, and most people are, you really shouldn't be managing it on yourself, or you should at least have someone who's going to be a life coach who, before you pull the trigger, you can call and talk to and say, should I be worried? And then you have someone to talk through. Really, once again, a therapist, someone to talk you through some of these things to help you out. And we all need that. I mean, it's crazy in all of our lives, right? Not just finances. It's this stuff applies to everything. And finances aren't special. They're not different than how you approach the rest of your life, your relationships, going to the gym, you know, all that other stuff, your health. It really needs to be thought of in the same way. And I'm a big believer in that, and that it drives a lot of things. And while statistics and fundamentals and analysis are important, it doesn't matter if you're an emotional person and you're going to sometimes hurt yourself and act in your own worst enemy when things get a little rocky. So hopefully that helped. That was 3B?
That was 3B.
Okay. Yep. Perfect. So let's move on to 4 then.
Sweet. So again, another question that's maybe not as exciting, but I'm definitely curious about is basically, how do you suggest essentially just navigating budgeting and managing expenses as a new professional? Because I've never really had a like regular income or regular expenses like I will be having in, I don't know, a few short months. So is there any sort of strategies to be more kind of, I guess, systematic with like the approach to money and managing it on like a day-to-day basis in a sense?
Yes. And I'm glad you brought that up, and I'm going to give a quick shameless promotion to me and what I'm doing for services. So I've realized that you and millions of people like you are out there who, and myself included, where you spent your whole life being supported by your parents, or, you know, just like money wasn't, you weren't making money and it wasn't part of your daily life. And then all of a sudden you have a job, you're making money, and it's like, oh, well, okay, now what, right? And what should you be doing? And there's millions of people out there like that. And none of them have had in the past, and even now, have had the advantage or the opportunities to work with professional advisors or people on this, for the most part, because they don't have investable assets. That barrier of entry has always been there for them to work with. So I have decided to change how I work with people to do more of a subscription model to help people exactly like you who need help with budgeting and cash flow and being held accountable. And then you spent, you know, $50 a month is what I was thinking for those models. And then you go invest in Robin and you go invest and do all that on your own. Because you don't need me to do that if you don't want. But I help people with the bigger picture stuff on that, the debt management for their student loans, how to put this to the cash flow, what should go in the 401k, what benefits to do at work, how much they could afford for a rental versus buying, saving maybe for 5 years down the road to buy something, what should be going to a Roth IRA, what those are, all that stuff. So those are all things we work through. We talk about, like I said, a financial life coach. Also to get more people to be a guest on the show, I'm offering everyone 1 free year of doing that as well. So those listening, if you are a guest on the show, you get 1 free year of that. Because it's not easy. Because what you need to do is you have to spend time to do it. And not everyone wants to. You need to figure out what's coming in let's stay at the beginning of the year you do it, but you're getting a job. So as soon as you get that, you need to figure out, what's my income? Okay. What am I going to be spending in terms of rent, in terms of utilities, in terms of stuff that if I lost my job, I still have to spend this money. Otherwise, they're turning off the power or the water, or I'm getting evicted, right? So, you know, going out to dinner once a week or having money for bars and friends does not go in that budget. That's the variable side. So you have to have a fixed expense and a variable expense. You budget all that out. You do a cash flow. You use certain percentages. And this is stuff that I kind of could get into a little bit more offline for you or with anyone else, because it gets technical. And then we go into, okay, what's income, what's expenses, what's left over, what do you want to spend on gifts or charities or friends or going out or fun stuff? What do you want to spend on paying down debts? It could be credit card, it could be student loans, it could be cars, whatever you have. And then what do you want to make sure goes into a 401k, into a Roth IRA, into an individual? What's left? How much should go into each one? And what should I do with the bonus that I get at the end of the year? What do I need to get for? So all these things are things that we work on to get you set up, and then evaluate it every year. Usually at the end of the year, you get a little raise, or you have a wedding, or things happen every year that affect you financially. Usually it's every 2 years that you need to reevaluate this plan, because that's why it's an ongoing service that I tell people usually work with the rest of your life. Because in your 20s, things are changing like crazy. You know, when a few years go by and you might want to get a new job, or you might meet someone and you might be getting married, or you might have a baby, right? Or you might have You might want to buy a house in a few years, and then you might need to get life insurance, right? And all these things happen, and it just becomes a big thing. And so there's too many variables for one person to plan. So you need to account for all those variables, whether it's you doing it yourself or working with a professional, but you have to do it. Once again, you need to set up some spreadsheets. You need to make sure you have all this tracked. You don't have to do it every day or every month, but you should do it at the beginning of the year, and you should evaluate it at the end of the year. And anytime a big life event change happens, once again, a job, wedding, it could be negative, it could be a death, it could be a disability. Once again, people forget to plan the negatives, unfortunately, in life, and the positives as well. And part of my job is to make sure there's no surprises, there's nothing that you can't handle, and that everything is coming in efficiently and afford, and you could afford it. So if anything crazy comes up, you're prepared to handle it. And 90% of people, I don't know, I think the statistics are on 80 to 90% of the people don't have enough cash flow on hand to withstand any type of like unexpected event, which is usually health or anything. But part of it is also building up cash in the bank, right? There's just a lot of stuff. I could go on and on, but but there's a lot, and it's a little overwhelming. And if you're 22 years old and graduating college, you don't really, most people don't want to do that. You seem like who you might enjoy that things, but most people are not like you. They don't want to think about that at all. And so that's really where I've targeted people to be like, Ross, $50 a month. You're like my financial, you know, I could go on YouTube and watch workout videos, but I'd rather just pay for a personal trainer to get me in shape because that's better for me and my personality.
Yep.
So that's where I've kind of positioned it to do. And then I set you up for all that, and you could live your life and be happy and know that Ross has got things covered on that side and you're good. And I was talking to your mom, and she liked the idea, and she thought that that makes a lot of sense, especially for me being younger, I could relate more. And that's why there's just different advisors to do different things like that. Whether you want to get invest with me or whoever else you want, you still need all that advice. And I think that's important to let people know. You have to do that. Even if you're making minimum wage out of college, it's still income coming in. You still have expenses. You still have debts. You still probably have a 401k at work. You have to get all that figured out. Because, man, I can't tell you how many people I've seen who are in their 50s or 60s and they never figured this out. And then they come to me for help and it's too late. I'm just being honest. It's too late. Life is too complicated. So do it now. Take advantage of being young, man. Time is so precious. And don't, you know, once again, if you don't want to do it yourself, that's fine. You know, that's where we're here to help. So hopefully that helps with you. Once again, those are all things that you'd have a conversation outside where we'd get into the nitty gritty. But like I said, those are some of the things you have to plan and think about and look at and evaluate. It's hard work. I tell people this isn't easy. People spend more time planning their trip to Disneyland than they do on the stuff I just described, which is crazy. You know, you might need 5 or 10 hours. That's how much I spend probably doing it for you. And it's might suck and it might be hard, and but it's so worth it. It's so necessary. You have to plan this stuff out. And a lot of times I think people just avoid it because they don't know what they're doing. They don't know the right person to help them. It's not their strong suit, right? A lot of that stuff. I get it. But if you avoid it, it doesn't make the problem go away. Just like anything else in life. I like to compare it. Yeah. So that's kind of it. And that's really why I wanted to bring you on and other people. Because I know there's millions of Will out there who are smart. They graduated school. They have great degrees. They worked hard. They have jobs. And I want to make sure that they're set up for success. Because the system doesn't necessarily set you up for success just based on your degrees. You have to do some more stuff. You have to plan the finances. The government doesn't care about you financially. They're not going to take care of you. And if it doesn't work out, they really don't care. Your parents might, your friends might, but are they going to be able to help you? So it's on that.
That's totally what I've noticed myself. Yeah. Like, even like last summer, my internship, they're like, hey, we'll match your 401k up to like whatever percent. Uh-huh. And I'm like, I don't know what any of
that, means.
So like, you get thrown into these like real life decisions without any education, any knowledge. And it's like, hey, you better do it now because you're missing out. And it just like, yeah, so... Yeah, I definitely see the value and the necessity of everything that you're describing.
Yeah,
because and like even in the short term, there's no one that really like helps you unless you get out yourself.
I made the same mistakes too. When I graduated, I went straight from undergrad to grad. I got an MBA and I was 23 and I was much more educated in that space than the average person. Mm-hmm. And I didn't do any of it right. I didn't build up a cash reserves. I was living at $1,000 a month in my checking account. That's it. I was spending money. I was la-da-da-dying it. I wasn't taking advantage of the 401k. And I was way more knowledgeable than the average person. I wasted 5 years until I got to this profession. I wasted 5 years of what I could have done of building up wealth and growing my money. Now, mm-hmm. luckily, you know, you could always catch up if you're younger, but right. I'd rather not people waste those 5 years or 10 for a lot of people, right? Let's do that. Let's take advantage of being young when you have less life commitments. Because you're right, even the smartest people, even the people who really understand life and have good jobs and stuff, this is just, it's a foreign concept. They don't teach this in school, which is a shame. And that's a whole other conversation. But no one learns this in school. It's stuff you learn out in the real world, always the hard way. And the problem is the hard way is wasting time in life. So let's not do that anymore, right? Let's get everything set up. I want to set up a whole generation of 20-year-olds and teenagers and even people younger than that, so they come out of college ready to know what they're doing financially, and they can retire when they're 40 or 50 because we killed it. Man, that would be awesome if I could set up a whole generation of people who retire in their 50s. Man, that would be great. It would be awesome. And then it would free up a whole new jobs, a bunch of jobs for younger people to come and take.
Yeah, right? I know. Right? It's a self-sustaining process.
That, like exactly. That. And then the government doesn't have to rely on you, and you could give your Social Security check to charity or whatever, right? I'm trying to do good things here. But yes, you're exactly right. And once again, I can't help the millions of people. That's too many clients. But, you know, the point is that it's very important. It's one of the most important things you can do when you graduate is get some financial literacy done, because, man, you're on your own. People don't discuss this in their families too. So it's not like you learn this stuff growing up. It's not like mom and dad or mom and mom or dad and dad or whatever. We're talking at the dinner table about make sure to maximize your 401k, right? It's kind of like, I said this on another podcast, it's kind of like the sexual conversation with your family. It's not discussed. Therefore, you have to figure it out on your own, which is scary and right. And I'm sure people make mistakes on that end. And it's the same thing here. So let's not do that. So I'll kind of end it, that fourth question on that. But I can't stress how important it is to set up a plan and do stuff, because yeah, I want to give you the time. I want to make sure that you can do what you want and retire and be happy in your 50s and not get stuck working a crappy job that you want to retire because you didn't save enough when you were younger.
Yeah.
That was four? Was that four?
That was
okay. Four, yep. So let's do question five. Five and the last one.
Yep. So five is, in all honesty, kind of counterintuitive to all the smart things that we've been talking about so far. And it's that, you know, I have a higher appetite for risk and all this FOMO that's been happening in the market. So any sort of semi-sustainable way of going into these more speculative investments with any sort of, you know, sound logic or reason to try to hop on these crazy waves of, you know, hundreds of percent happening in 3 months? Or is it really just a gamble and it can't do it?
That stuff, it's not, you're talking a little bit more about, it's not a get rich quick scheme, but I compare it to that. You want to put money in and make a bunch right away. And listen, I do too, and so does everyone. But that's trading, that's gambling, that's not investing. For the most part, some people might have such an extensive knowledge of some limited thing that they could do it with skill, but I'm gonna throw those people out there, they're outliers. That stuff, once again, it would be great if we could have a crystal ball and see stuff, but we can't. And at this point, for a lot of that stuff, it's more of a hope and a guess than there is met with fundamental stuff. So once again, if you wanna do that with $100, with $500, with money that's disposable to you that if you lose, it's fine, then take the hope and the prayer. Take the lottery ticket, understanding the downside of that is most likely you're going to lose it all or it's going to earn nothing. Okay, but there's nothing really crazy fundamental about that stuff that you're going to be able to find an edge on anyone else that you think, okay, I read this article and now it's going to be, you know, blah, blah, blah. They're going to be the next GameStop and Reddit. I'm sorry, it's all a guess. So I would tell people to be very cautious. People might say this and they're wrong. You can't outsmart the market. You cannot. You could do it once. You could get lucky. You could do it maybe over short term, but over the long period of time, over larger quantity and variable size or larger sample size, you're not going to outsmart the market. No one can do that. If they say that, they're lying. Sorry, you can't. The market's smarter than everyone, even me. if it wasn't, then there'd be then I wouldn't need to do this podcast. I would just go buy all the stocks that are going to grow 1,000% the next year and make all the money, and I could retire tomorrow, right? But I can't, and most people can't either. So unfortunately, that brings me whole back to the fact that it's a long, hard, arduous road to growing wealth for most people. People who have millions of dollars spent 30 years saving and investing and growing and being patient. It's an unfortunate reality. Now, there is other things you can do. You know, maybe you do want to take, you know, you have $1,000 to spend, and maybe you want to take $900 and do long-term investing that's stable. And maybe you want to take $50 or $100 and throw it into something that's crazy. Maybe there's some art that you think could blow up in value, or something that you think could be the next big thing. That's fine. Take the 3 to 5% of your investable income, not your total income, that's too much, but of what your investable portfolio could be, and throw it into something speculative, throw it into something that you want to think could hit big, because if you lose it, right, that's only 3 or 5% of your portfolio value. So that should help answer that percentage. There's nothing wrong with that, but please don't take it all, because you're probably going to lose it all. It's not the best idea, and I don't have any specific recommendations. I know people have gotten into art. There's ways to invest in wine, and there's ways to do commodities and short squeeze and options and all that stuff. But please make sure you're doing that with caution, with 3 or 5% of your portfolio, and not with everything. So no, I mean, I wish there was a get rich quick scheme, quick answer. It's not. Investing is hard work. It's for the long haul. You got to have the long-term vision hat on and understand that it's going to be painful sometimes. But in 10 or 20 years, you're going to see the fruits of the labor. Compounding interest, exponential growth. If you don't know those terms, look it up. It's a snowball effect, right? The tiny little snowball you roll down the hill becomes a giant at the bottom. And you're like, you can't comprehend quite how $1,000 could grow to 50 over 30 years, or, you know, 10 or whatever. But it does. And that's how it works. It's just, that's math. But please keep that in mind. That's why I also tell people to start younger. Because then if you're 20 or 22, you might see some of that really start happening when you're in your 30s and 40s, as opposed to starting in your 30s or 40s and waiting till your 50s or 60s, right? I mean, that's it. Mm-hmm. It's a big difference. Starting 5 or 10 years earlier, we only live to be 80 or 90, right? That's a huge, if you said I could retire 10 years earlier, that's invaluable to me. That's significant, right? Yeah. It is, but yeah, I know everyone wants the get rich quick scheme. I get it. It's easier. It's quicker. We want immediate gratification now, but that's not really part of what I do. And I don't think that's really realistic. You know, if someone you know did that, that's great. Pat them on the back. They're going to try to do it again, and they're probably going to lose it all. And they won't tell you about it, right? They're only going to tell you about their successes. They're not going to tell you about their failures. So if you're listening, thinking everyone out there made hundreds of thousands of dollars on this stuff, that's just not the reality. It's really not.
I think it's easy to like it's social media. It's all the stuff. Yeah. So I think getting a professional perspective is a good like cold water in the face.
Yeah.
To, like, snap me, and I'm sure a lot of others back to reality of like, yeah, that's not really possible. It's just sort of luck.
Yeah. I know. Once again, you see the 1,000% in the market. That's great. You know, to give you some perspective, my clients and a lot of portfolios in the last 6 months or a year, the market did very well. We're probably 15 or 20%, you know, over that time. That's great. 1,000% is not a realistic thing. Even what I said is not realistic. Like I said, the market over the history of its time earns about 8%. And if you're doing everything on your own and you're not being your own risk, I mean, you just threw it in the S&P 500 and didn't touch it for 20 years, you could do a quick calculator of what your money will do. It's very quickly go online, do a calculator, put that money in, grow it at 8%, never touch it for 20 years, and you'll know exactly what it'll be worth. That's something you could do. That's the easy part. The hard part is not touching it, is not freaking out when it lost 50%, right? And so it, once again, it all sounds easier than it is, but it really is about long-term view, keeping that long-term focus and not letting distractions like the news or media, because remember, the news and the social media isn't designed necessarily to educate you. It's designed for you to watch and for you to listen. All right. It's designed to be entertainment, right? The guy on TV who screams up and down and presses buttons to make sound effects for you to buy stocks isn't there to educate you. He's there to sell advertising revenue and to make money. So he has a TV show. It's important. Okay. Fox News, CNBC, CNN. Once again, it is all important to help you, but the market stuff on there is designed to do the most crazy story of the day. So you watch it. Okay. It's not necessarily representative of the real story of the market, of what's going on, because it's a lot of that stuff is boring and you wouldn't tune in to watch. So I'm glad you asked that, because I think people, and that's, I think that's similar with other news stories, right? You could watch the news and feel like the world's falling, and it's just because they're showing you the craziest stories of the day, and they're usually negative. So it's just, please keep all that stuff in perspective. Okay. All that stuff is designed for viewership, not to educate you, which is unfortunate, but anyways, hopefully that helps. On that end.
That totally does.
Yeah.
It's like I see my portfolio and you see the ETFs and you're like, this is boring. And you're like, why can't I do more? But you really can't do much more. You're gonna, like, I feel like the losses and gains from the short-term stuff is just always going to just basically cancel out zero.
FOMO is so dangerous for investing. It's really, that's why you see the people who have the 2% returns or worse, who say the market's rigged or they never earn. Listen, the market isn't rigged. You can put your money in and earn 8%, right? Like I said, over a long period of time, guaranteed.
Yeah.
But why doesn't everyone do that? And it's the FOMO, it's the emotions, it's all that stuff that come into it. And it's crazy. Like I said, a lot of my job isn't necessarily the financial analytic side of things. It's the emotional side. It's the talking people through things, which is crazy how valuable that is. Just like with a personal trainer, they might not need to know all the amazing workouts. They just need to motivate your ass to get to the gym and do it every day and hold you accountable. Yeah. That's what you're paying them to do, right?
Yeah.
They might not be, they might not know about every muscle in your body and all the, right? I don't even know all that stuff, but, and they might not either. And it doesn't matter, right? If they got you here, if you're doing your workout and you're losing weight and feeling good, then they've accomplished their goal, right? Whether or not they know everything, just like, right. I mean, it's like I say with that stuff. There's a reason why those jobs and those people exist, man, because people left to their own devices. FOMO, it's real. It really is. And that worries me about this Robinhood. I can't imagine how many people are online right now clicking buttons looking for the next GameStop or AMC. And they're not doing properly long term investing. They're missing out on market returns and all this stuff. And it worries me, because it's just, that's not the reality of the larger market. That's just a tiny little micro section that happened for a few lucky people. Good for you. Yeah.
Find something, basically.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you, Will. That was a good conversation. Some good stuff from people younger in your situation. I'm hoping everyone listening right now realizes kind of what's going on, hopefully has a little bit more knowledge and empower to take control of their financial life as they graduate now in the next few years, feel a little bit better about what they're doing. And if not, you know, that's what I'm here for as well. Thanks again, Will, very much for being a guest today on The Money Seat. Tune in next time, everyone, for another episode of The Money Seat with your host, Ross Krause.